Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast, and we have got to the end of our series about 10 different forms of learning. And this has been so much fun making this series, and we're not finished yet, but the last part is going to be about learning through volunteering, because I think it's something really important that we can do, volunteering our time, our skills, to support organizations and topics that we care about. But it's also a way that we, as people who volunteer, can learn something as well. So there were a number of people who were interested in participating in this episode, and we're actually going to break it down into smaller parts because of coordinating everyone's schedules, getting everyone together. The easiest way to do that was for me to have two guests now, and then we're going to have two further parts for the episode later on. So welcome to my two guests who are here today. So let's start with Sonia, because I don't know you yet and I'd like to find out a bit more about you. So maybe you could just start by telling me and the listeners something about you, what you do, and what your link to volunteering is.
Okay, so my name is Sonia. I am 30 years old. I come from a small town in Portugal, a small but very lovely town called Bragança. Okay. I work as an English teacher, and I also work as a private tutor. It's my fifth year actually being a private tutor. I also work as a freelance translator and court interpreter. So basically those are the things that I do in my daily life. I teach students of different ages and levels, and I really enjoy doing that and helping them building confidence with languages and Portuguese, because I also help them in Portuguese, not only in English. I've always been passionate about languages since I was really young. I had this clear idea that I wanted to become a translator, and that's what I did. That's what I studied for. I just entered my doctorate, my PhD. Well, we call it here doctorate. I'm going to take it in Spain, but it's online, so I won't have to go there. But I will do my PhD in translation in hopes to fulfill my goal, that is to learn more about languages. That is the field that I'm passionate about. Besides work, I'm passionate about sports. I do gym, I run, and I love traveling with my friends and watching movies. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And Miriam, we're
Hello.
Talking about who we are. So I think you and I first met when you wrote something on LinkedIn, and you were talking about podcasts and how they can be helpful for keeping language skills up to date. And so I was after recommendations for Portuguese podcasts. I think that's when we first started talking, but I don't actually know so much about you. So could you give an introduction to explain who you are and what you do?
Okay, so I was born in Angola. I'm Portuguese. I lived in Portugal for about 40 years maybe. And then 11 years ago, I relocated to the UK. I live in Cambridge now. I did a degree in translation, was an EU Erasmus student as well, and I am a language quality and linguistic validation consultant, so moved a little bit more into the medical translation area and validation. I do have a passion for language quality, and also for the cultural adaptation besides the mere translation. I was keen on that before, and the linguistic validation does have a lot to do with that. And besides that, I am an active patient advocate. I have a rare disease called sickle cell, which is a blood disorder. And I am a patient advocate. I started doing it still when I was in Portugal as part of the Portuguese Hemoglobinopathies Association. And then when I relocated to the UK and trying to find support, I started on a worldwide level, really, with the European Sickle Cell Federation, the European Hematology Association, and the ERN EuroBloodNet as well. So that takes quite a bit of a chunk of my time. I also like books as well. So a project that I participate as well is called Projeto da Mastor, and it's about converting into ebook works in Portuguese language which are already in the public domain. And it has been quite an interesting experience because I was very adverse to ebooks, and now it still have a lot to say about that. But anyway, and besides that, what do I like? The beach, cooking and baking, and the movies, of course, and a lot of different things. So I guess we will find out a little bit more during the conversation. And thank you for having me.
It's good to see both of you. And that's maybe a conversation for us to have after the podcast about ebooks, because ebooks are a really accessible way for me to read information, and I'm always looking for interesting new things to read. So yeah, maybe that's a conversation to have as well as podcasts. But for now, we're here to talk about volunteering. So for both of you, I'm just curious to know, what was it that first made you think about becoming involved in volunteering for organizations? How did you choose which ones to give your time to? What was important to you, and what kind of roles did you start by getting involved with? Who wants to start?
I can start. It's okay. So for me, it all started during the pandemic. We were stuck at home, of course, and I wanted to make good use of my time, and I wanted to give my knowledge and what I do know. I wanted to give that knowledge to organizations or institutions that could use my help, in this case, in translation, of course. So it started in the pandemic. I also wanted to do something meaningful. So I began researching organizations and in institutions, first in Portugal, of course. I sent my CV to a lot of them. The ones that interested me the most, saying I said that I was available to make translations as a volunteer. And it's how I started collaborating first with Caritas and then with Corações com Coroa. In Caritas, their mission is to promote equal justice to several people in need, and also dignity, especially most vulnerable people. So work they also work regarding social justice. So there were a lot of different texts that I had to translate. They also have a religious part that I did not have experience in, so it was a little bit of a challenge. I had to translate some speeches, Pope speeches or other priests and bishops, and it was quite a challenge. They also support people in vulnerable situations, and they promote human rights. So my texts were surrounding those themes. And both organizations were really happy with my work after several months. And over time, we built a strong connection and some sort of friendship and closeness that I still maintain to this day.
And the second organization, is that the same kind of texts, or is that something different?
Corações com Coroa is more the same without the religious part. It's not related to religion. They also have another theme that is women rights, And it was something really special to work in. And especially they work with teenagers about I'm trying to remember texts that I did with them. I think it was about promoting I don't know, some sort of product about period cramps. I don't know, something related
Okay.
to that. I can't remember now, I'm sorry, but it was something related to that aimed to teens. So they do that work, and I think it's really special.
Yeah, so you're using your skills that you have in your main role, like your job. And you're bringing them to organizations that need that support and supporting them in the same way. Is it the same for you, Miriam? Do you use your translation skills or?
I do a bit more than that, but yes, also. So I started, I think, I don't remember when I started because it's not like, so in the UK and more of the Anglo-Saxon culture, volunteering is something that you are used to doing as part of your social integration, and you also get credits for it when you go into your CV or when you go to university. University or whatever. In Portugal, it's not like that. But I am a Catholic, Roman Catholic, and so when you grow up as part of your local community, you start by doing a lot of volunteering in small things. So either helping other kids with their teaching difficulties, or it doesn't matter. So I think it started that way a long time ago when I was still a teenager, but then. Probably more actively, I had a difficult period in my life when I changed jobs. I decided to move from out of Lisbon more into the countryside, still in Portugal. And I was looking for a life which was not so workaholic and more meeting other people, finding other interests and things like that. And so I joined the local library, which was good with reading communities. And I searched online according to my interests for things that I could do. So one of them was this project that I was talking about, Projeto Adamastor. Adamastor is a mythical figure from one of our greatest, I don't know, I think it's 16th century epic poems, one of the greatest. And it's a metaphor for like a humongous adventure that you don't know if it's possible to achieve. And it's inspired in Project Gutenberg, which already exists with the e-books. And it's like, okay, I can proofread, so why not put my proofreading skills to the use? And with that, I also learned a lot more about the e-book structures, which was something that 20 years ago or 15 years ago, it was very much unknown in the market. And I learned all about how to buy e-books when you're abroad, which was not easier in the beginning. E-books in Portuguese, it was quite difficult. In English and in French, you can find a lot. In Portuguese, it was a challenge. It's much better right now. I also got involved in the design choices for the covers, which is really interesting, and learning about authors I never heard of, and I read quite a lot because it's not just Portuguese authors, it's also Brazilian ones. So there is quite a variety. And what else? Choosing expert. So bits of text to present the book. And there was a time when we did questionnaires with public figures about your reading habits and how do you promote reading habits and stuff. So I learned a lot with how to reach out to people and how to think about how are we going to captivate people to learn about this, choosing titles, which are the ones which are most appealing. I don't know, so many things. For example, I read in an an e-reader, I check the words, which is very convenient with a dictionary and even Googling. But there are references, like for example, in older texts to different currencies and what's the equivalent today, or things which are a little bit more far-fetched, and adding notes to help the readers understand the content better. So that's a part of it. And then patient advocacy, it started maybe in my 30s and it grew. And that's where I applied the translation. So people would ask me, can you translate this or that? And then how to do a newsletter, what content goes into a newsletter, how to make texts which are more technical, more approachable to patients, how to engage, for example, with social media. I wasn't a fan of social media, but it is a tool that reaches out to a lot of people. So now I do a lot of social media posting. Especially on Facebook and LinkedIn, about events and about, I don't know, dates or things like that with specific content. So there is a lot behind it. Yeah, it's been good.
Like a journey for both of you, and both of you have brought skills that you already have, but it sounds like you've both learned new skills as well, and learned to do new, like to translate new types of text, or to be involved in projects that you hadn't been involved in before. Are there other new things that you've learned, or how has this experience helped you as well, helped you to develop either personally or professionally, or what do you think? How has this experience helped you?
Maybe I can go first now. So I think that one of the things that I learned, and it has been consolidated a lot when I relocated to the UK, is about different cultures. Because as a Portuguese, you learn quite a lot, or you know very well, because you have a lot of familiarity, for example, with the Spaniards or the Italians, because you have Latin roots. I was born in Angola, so I also have quite a bit with African countries, especially the Portuguese African speaking countries. But coming to the UK, and because I didn't work as a translator initially, but as a language consultant, which has a different array of skills and projects, but I worked with teams of 45 different languages, and everyone is different. Everyone reacts differently. It's learning to deal with the time zones, and it's learning to maybe this person reacts in a different way because their world is completely different. And it was massive, and it does help a lot. So in that sense, it opened the horizons incredibly, and you gain a sensitivity that I probably didn't have before. That is very helpful as well in the patient advocacy of listening to the other and understanding the other more. So I would say that was probably the biggest one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that you can, like, so often we just take what people say and make judgments about it based on our own experience, and yet there can be so much more behind that based on people's experiences or view of the world, or just what's normal in different cultures, and learning to ask questions, to be curious rather than just to believe that we know what somebody meant or why somebody said something. I think that's a lifelong learning that we're all here to do, but I think it's really important, especially when you're working globally, to have these skills and curiosity to know more about people rather than just to think we understand them. How about you, Sonia? Is this something that happened to you as well? Did you meet people that you otherwise wouldn't have come across in your day-to-day life, or?
I forgot to mention before that Corações com Coroa also works in gender equality. They do work regarding gender equality and inclusion and active citizenship. I forgot to mention that before, besides women rights. Regarding the skills that I've learned, well, I have my work is basically online. Okay, I haven't met the people that I contact with in Caritas and Corações com Coroa, so I think it's a little bit different. I didn't meet those people face to face per se, but We are in contact a lot regarding this text that I translate and other projects. Some months ago, I also translated an app for Corações com Coroa that they released. I think it was about a year ago or something. Despite me having not met these people face to face, I've learned so many stories about the people that they help because I translated them. So I think it's a different perspective, I guess, because I think you learn how to be more empathetic and socially aware when you encounter yourself with stories about war or refugees or immigrants in different difficult, sorry, difficult scenarios. And these people are helped by Caritas mainly. Well, these things that I've just described, these people are helped by Caritas. I think like at the end of the day, it's important to communicate when I'm translating these texts. I think it's really important to communicate with sensitivity because we're dealing with delicate matters, like I told you, like war or immigrant situations. Like I told you before, I've learned these stories by reading the stories from these people. So it's a different perspective.
So you work from English into Portuguese, or the other direction as well? Because is the second organization a Portuguese organization, or is it like the Portuguese branch of a larger organization?
Caritas, it's global, but they have headquarters in different countries. So I work directly with Portuguese Caritas, that it's in Lisbon, as well as Corações com Coroa. I'm sorry, what was your question? I forgot.
If they are both international organizations, or if you translate in both directions, or from English to Portuguese, or
Caritas is global, okay? Caritas is global. Corações com Coroa it's a Portuguese organization, but I do a lot of translations from Portuguese to English because they want to promote some causes that they have or some events. They have an event every year in May. And I translate a lot of their communications or presentations and things like that, or special events that they have. I translate them into English. Okay. Both Caritas and Corações com Coroa. Yes.
Yeah, that was my question, because it's a Portuguese name for the organization, so I guess there must be some translation in the other
Oh,
direction as
yes.
well.
In English, it means hearts with a crown.
Yeah, there we go. If our listeners are wondering now, now you know.
Yes.
So, would you look for other roles or other opportunities in any of these organizations, or do you think you're like busy enough with what you have, or do you ever help with other types of projects that you haven't done so far, or do you think it's good to be very focused on what you're doing at the moment?
Well, I am really am busy at the moment. Next week I'm going to start teaching English in another school. I don't have the time to invest like I wanted, but every time they send me an email, "Hey, Sonia, can you help us with this?" I never say no. Okay. They know my schedule and I say, "Take your time. We need this for like the 10th. But just tell us if you can. If you can't, we will manage." But for some reason, the universe or God works in mysterious ways, and I've always had time to deliver the texts with quality, so I'll manage. Yes, but for now, that can only be my role with these organizations because, well, luckily, I don't have any more time.
That's an interesting point, though, that you mentioned about time, because I think, like all of us, I believe you really want to find time to do something like voluntary work, then you will find time, or you'll make time, or you'll. But what would you say to people who are saying that they don't have time? I mean, maybe that's enough. Like, they don't have time. It's up to them. Nobody should be like pushed into something they don't want to do. But how do you, let's try it another way. How do you find time, both as professionals with other things going on, with other responsibilities? How do you make sure that you have time for your voluntary activities?
Well, maybe I do something that it's not very healthy, but sometimes I do two things at a time. Okay. Sometimes I'm like teaching something and like I can be writing some things that I need for another type of project, and maybe it's not an healthy solution, but it works. Okay. Not well, depending on the work, of course, but I guess I'm still trying to figure out how to balance so many things, but I think my balance is healthy, even though I do two things at a time. I can be like listening to something for my work and writing a different thing at a time.
Wow.
Maybe that's not so good for my brain at the moment.
But if it works for you, then why not? If it, if you get good
It
results.
works, but not every day, of course. Sometimes. But I think well, it's not, of course, my usual. When I'm like my schedule is tight, I do that. But I always had really good management skills, I guess. I can say no when I need to say no, or I can say I can't for tomorrow, but I can for Friday, for example. And I think that's been helping me. And people that know me, people, if you work with someone for the first time, maybe they don't know, but if you work with them repeatedly, we kind of adapt to each other. And I have a really good work environment, and my bosses are really flexible, so I think I'm lucky in that department. When I need to balance some things, sometimes, for instance, on Wednesday I have a court interpretation and I need to skip a private tutor lesson, and it's flexible. So I think I'm really lucky in that department, I guess.
Okay, and Miriam, do you want to add anything
Oh, I
about
have a ton of
time
things to
management?
add. I'm sorry, I could not hear it right now.
No, it's fine. I could add a ton of things. Let me start with the finding the time. So I think that in this occasion, we have been talking about volunteering for specific organizations. When you go and look for, I want to do some volunteering and I want to work with a reputable organization and give them some of my time, my skills, and so on. But there is so much more that you can do with volunteering out of that context, in every day, in your everyday life, in so many different contexts. And as I was saying, probably as I started, just by helping other people. And there is so much work that you do in that sense of it's not part of your job, it's not part of your family relationships or even your friends' relationships, normal. But you go out of your way and you dedicate some time to help someone other in any front. It doesn't matter if it's taking care of someone else, if it's helping them with the school tasks, or if it's by, I don't know, whatever. There are so many things that you can do to help other people, and that's also volunteering, okay? And so the finding the time is something that each one of us knows their own schedule. Sometimes maybe you don't have the time, but other times you have, and you can put it to good use. Or I don't know. It really depends. It's not the same every single time. It's not the same for all the tasks. Some are more time consuming. But I totally agree with Sonia that maybe when it's a first contact with someone, you need to be a little bit, you need to stick more to a set deadline and a set time and so on. But as you develop a relationship, you learn to adapt. And maybe you don't have time right now, but you can say, I can't do it right now, but I can do it in 2 or 3 days. Or how about next week? Or I have no availability at all this week, but next week I can give you, I don't know, a few hours. It really depends. So I think that we can all do it to a different extent. Some people have more visibility, other people have a lot less visibility. But in the end, if it's not your day-to-day job, if it's not part of your day-to-day life with a family and so on, it is volunteering, it's helping others.
Yeah, making someone's
So.
life better somehow, doing something to make their life easier, or just yeah, being a helpful person at the base of it is just trying to be, trying to give something, trying to make life easier. It doesn't have to be a regular commitment, although it can be, but it's also the other things that you do just to be nice, to be helpful.
Absolutely. Sometimes
Yeah.
it can be because you want to develop an interest, for example, in a different area, and it's something that you would like to do, but it's not like you don't have any studies in that area, you don't have any skills in that area, but it's an interest that you have, and you join a group like, hey, I'd like to know a little bit more, and after a while, you're helping with this or that, and you are growing your knowledge in that area and your skills. And it's volunteering because, in the end, it's something that you do outside of your normal things that you're not paid for.
Yes.
So that's the thing. Yeah. And speaking about the not paid for alongside with the time. One of the things is that volunteering can be very time consuming. And I speak, for example, from my patient advocacy side, which consumes a lot of stuff because I do it for several organizations and several groups, even smaller groups, patient support groups, like the hospital where I go to the hematology appointment, there is a patient support group. And in the end, after a while, you end up going for patient days that are organized to explain to people what your condition is like and what it's like to be a patient with that and how would you like for things to be better. Or, for example, the other day, because I'm in the UK, there was a girl who doesn't speak English regularly or fluently, and she needed help with a situation. And I found someone who had the knowledge because it's not a social worker, but knows a little bit about the benefits and all of that. But one didn't speak English and the other didn't speak Portuguese. So I was on 1.5 hours on the phone with both of them, and I was doing interpreting, which is not my regular set of skills. But of course, if I speak English and Portuguese fluently and I know the all the terminology and all the stuff, why not? They didn't pay me for it, right? So it's volunteering, and it's part of no organization specifically. It's just someone asked, can you please help with this? Of course I can. Why would I say no? If I have the time, why would I say no? And but even with organizations, a lot of them depend on patients and the patient experience and what it's like and patient voice groups and a lot of stuff, especially in the UK. And all of the meetings and the events and everything, they happen work days, working hours. Right now, I don't have a 9-to-5 job, so I'm looking for another job. I have been doing some trainings, a lot of the volunteering. But when I was working, it was really difficult working full time and finding the time to participate in the events and to help with stuff that only happens on weekdays and working hours. It's more, how can I explain? In Portugal, there is a lot of things that are done which are outside working hours because it's the only way. Otherwise people, they have their regular jobs and they can't do it during working times. In the UK and on a EU level, maybe because organizations have people fully dedicated to it's not just volunteers, things tend to occur more during working hours and work days, so you can only do it if it's someone who is not working. If you are freelance exclusively and you are a master of your time, as if you can say that, Or I don't know. It's really, really difficult. If you want to be active in that sense, it is really difficult because nothing happens after 6 o'clock.
Yeah, people are
And
quite protective of their free time, aren't they?
very rarely on a weekend. It's very rare. And it's just you have to adjust, and sometimes you can do some and the others you can't. So two things that I would like to say is that in the UK, because in Portugal most of the companies don't have that, but in the UK many have, which is a volunteering policy and giving your employees, like, I don't know, 3 to 5 days a year that they can use for volunteering practice, for volunteering events or activities or whatever. Of course, they have to justify, they have to say who they are doing it for and everything. But it doesn't have to be. I worked in different companies. Some would allow for that. Others, it's just for, I don't know, the month of May, because it's the month of volunteering. So if you have stuff happening in June, you can't apply for it because it's not happening in May.
So you need
It's
to
so
check the
different.
policy. You need to see
Or
how the company, if you're in the
there you
UK,
go.
how
But
they.
most of the companies, they don't even have a policy. So I have to take time out of my annual leave to go and participate in this stuff because there is no sensitivity in that sense on a social responsibility that also includes volunteering. And for those relying on volunteers, please consider that they need to make a living as well, and that they need to accommodate it somehow. So it's a lot of stuff that goes around volunteering.
There's a lot to think about, and especially if you, as a listener, are thinking about this as well, then it is worth finding out if the company that you work for has something in place already. You could also suggest that they do if they don't, but have a look and see what's available because you might be surprised. It may not have been something that was part of your induction. So something that neither of you, I know it's not part of your main experience in the volunteering, but because this podcast is about languages and language acquisition, and have you had any experiences where you volunteered your skills in an area where one of your other languages was used so that you also gained more contact with people using an additional language or like in a new area? Have you done anything like that or?
Well, I can start, I guess. Well, I just have to say that I agree with the Miriam's point of view regarding volunteering, because even if I wanted to, and of course in every town there are several ways you can help the community, and you know, I try to, even though I'm not, maybe I don't go to events because I just don't have the time because they are held at working hours, but I donate a lot of clothes and books and things, name it, and furniture, well, things that regular people do, I guess. So we all try to make our part, but of course I think schedules are the thing that forbids us, I guess, to participate in a more active way. And if they were held at the weekends, maybe we could find time to balance our personal life and work life and volunteering and you name it. But well, that's a good topic for also another conversation, the time to do volunteering. But regarding the languages that I work with, well, I work mainly with English and Spanish, even though I haven't worked with Spanish for a couple of years now because, well, every time they ask me to translate, it's always in English. I think English has been the language that I work with the most. Maybe my Spanish is a little rusty, but I go to Spain a lot, so I try to compensate in that way. So every translation or every interpretation that I'm asked to do, it's always in English. But of course, I enjoy working with both languages because even though I'm fluent in English since I was very young, I can speak both languages. I've learned Spanish, a little later in life when I went to college. But every time I have the opportunity to work with either language, I accept it, yes.
Okay, so because as well as It will bring in, like you said, with some of the speeches or new vocabulary that you don't necessarily use in your day-to-day life, like for religious speeches.
Yes.
That's an opportunity to learn something new. I think I would probably struggle with that as well. But you know, like it's every time you're exposed to something new, it's an opportunity to learn.
Yes, and I've learned a lot, I have to say. It's interesting things because those are things that you don't know in your daily life. And sometimes it's like a curiosity, like, oh, is this really like this? And it's very interesting. I really like it. I think it's the fun part of the job, and it makes it not dull. It makes it adventurous, I guess. Even though you are sitting on the computer, it can be an adventure.
It's exploring, it's learning something new, whether it's like new information from the text or new people, new perspectives. It's a chance to learn something that you didn't know before. So as we come to the end of our conversation, let's think about like favorite experiences. Is there something that you can remember, either a project or something that you were involved with within the volunteering activities, something like a favorite memory?
Well, I can start, I guess. When I read this question that you've sent me before, I immediately thought about a thing that happened to me. I don't know. We are in 2025, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And it was actually a very simple moment. I was at home having lunch. It was a regular day, and I was watching the news, like I always do when I'm eating. And I saw this short clip from on TV from a documentary that I had translated for Caritas. It was about refugees in Eastern Europe, and I was very surprised. I called my family and friends and said, turn on the TV because my text is what I translated is on the TV. And it was completely unexpected. Of course, I didn't know where the documentary was going to be shown or what kind of program or country, I don't know. But it made me really happy to see that my work had somehow reached television and a wider audience and contributing to sharing these important stories, in this case about refugees, I think in Romania. I think it was in Romania. It was before the Ukrainian war. Yes, it was before.
Oh, that's cool, especially when you don't expect it, because it's like a nice surprise as well.
Was like I didn't even finish like having lunch. I was so excited. It was really cool. And Miriam?
I don't think I have a specific memory, and maybe that's really bad,
Oh, maybe
but
they're
I
just too
think of
many.
every but every time that as a patient advocate, every time that I get involved in a new project where I know that it's going to have a wide reach and is going into a different audience. So, for example, a few years ago, I was invited to participate in the first scientific article. So I don't have a scientific background, but more and more research wants to involve patients as experts in their condition, of course, and have the patient voice as part of it. So I was invited along with another colleague. I spoke for sickle cell. He spoke for thalassemia, which are both hemoglobinopathies. And we were invited to read the article and to provide our feedback and to write a couple of paragraphs for it as well. And seeing that our feedback is taken into account, and then finally having our name in a published article which has, I don't know, thousands and millions of views in The Lancet Hematology. Or last year there was a poster. It was my first scientific poster, and I will be presenting it soon in an event as well. So it is really nice to see that whatever you are involved has a visible side, and people will be using it for other things, and it will be a discussion point driving policies or driving the way that clinicians or healthcare professionals or researchers look into your condition in a different perspective. That's always really nice. And finally, the work with social media, because as I said before, I was very averse to it. And one thing is having your Facebook page where you post a few things now and then for the family and the friends. Another one is gaining a responsibility of, okay, I want the community to know, or whoever, because you never know who is going to reach. In Portuguese or in English, and I read a lot of stuff and I go for a lot of stuff in French and in Spanish and in Italian, the languages that I do understand. And I sometimes communicate with people when they don't speak English that fluently or Portuguese. And like putting your business hat on, and okay, I have to do something which is accessible. But it brings the information concisely, but the things that I want to convey, and you see that that does really touch, and it's reposted, and it shows up, and someone mentions that when you meet them in a completely different context. And I read your piece a while ago on this. That's an amazing feeling.
And you are active. I often see your name on LinkedIn. You post a lot of information there.
I
Yeah.
do, and
Yeah.
I do it on my own name, and also on the name of the Portuguese Association, because they have quite a few initiatives with the African Portuguese speaking countries, which it's important to know that many teaching activities and diagnoses and how to do this and that, so that's really important. So I that's something that I enjoy. Not an easy thing, because it's not like I'm very creative and I'm very brainy. So I grab something and I need to develop the right angle to convey it and everything. But the more you do it, the more you develop a skill on how to do it. So I think I'm getting good at it. I would like to think so. So that's the communication area is something that it really attracts me.
Yeah, so that's like another thing, another skill to not necessarily learn, but to develop, like all the time that we're using these skills, we're developing them more.
Absolutely.
And so just to finish with then, from both of you, do you have any tips or advice for somebody who is thinking about becoming involved in organized volunteering in some way? Where to start? How to start? What would you tell them?
I think it's much easier nowadays because you go online and you find most of the stuff. So depending on what you want to do, usually aligned with your interests somehow, it might be easier. And to have an idea, and one of the things that I think that people need to learn normally is that you want to do something, but you are committing to it. So if you don't do it on a regular basis, you really need to think of putting aside some time for it. It doesn't have to be the same every week, and you can have busier times and times where you are more available, but there is a commitment. So if you say, I want to do it, it's not like you show up once, you do it, and then you're gone. Unless it's the organization that say, oh, we don't have a needs regularly for it. Not my experience. We just need you for this or that. But it is a commitment. So it will be like a couple of hours every week, or 5 to 10 hours every month, or something like that. And you need to think of it that it's a commitment. That's one of the things. But
Someone's
you go
relying on
online
you.
basically, and the same thing, the same way that Sonia was describing. She sent her CV. She said, I want to work in this area, or whatever. Sometimes it's your friends that already work somewhere and say, we need someone else. Would you like to help? Or your family, would you like to help? Or it's the local church, they need someone, if that's the case. Or your local sports club, for example. I don't know, so many different ways. If you really want to do it, you can just go there and say, oh, I would like to help in this capacity, and I have a few hours. Are you interested? Who can I talk to? Either online or in person. That's a great way to start.
Yeah, and I like your point about commitment as well, because if you said that you're going to do something, somebody is relying on you to do that things, and if you don't do it, they either have to find someone else, or that thing doesn't get done, or okay, life happens sometimes and schedules need to change. But it is a commitment if you say you're going to help, even if you're not being paid for it, because it's someone's job to coordinate all the things that need to be done and the people who are going to do them. So and Sonia, do you have any closing tips for?
Yes, I totally agree with Miriam and her vision about this. Her vision about volunteering, because I think it's important to have commitment. But imagine, like, okay, I just have available this weekend and there is going to be an event and I can participate. Well, if you can just go once, then go. I just remember that like 2 or 3 years ago, an animal organization here in Bragança, they do it quite often, like every 3 months or something. They were in a big supermarket, and people could donate animal food or other supplies. And I was there all day as a volunteer. They had these different schedules, and people would send them a message, say, "Okay, I'm available from like 2 to 4," and people would go there and commit through that time. And then at 4, other people would appear. And like, it's an example of things you can participate without having to be like a weekly commitment. In my town, there are a lot of that, and every time I have the chance, well, I do my part. Even if I can't be there, well, I go there and buy animal food, or in another day, and just go there and donate, I think. But because I'm very passionate about animals and animal rights, but I think it's our job as a community to help a little bit. It doesn't have to be a lot, but just a little bit. So, but I forgot what I was trying to say. What I was going to say besides this idea, I just can't remember. Can you repeat the question, please?
It was about tips for people, but I think that's another good point that you made there. Like, even if you don't have much time, like even if you just have a couple of hours, there will be somebody that wants that couple of hours. Like, you don't have to let that be a barrier to starting. If you don't have so much free time, there's always something that you can do.
Yes, and I also remember that if you can start volunteering in some form, I think networking is really important. You can talk to your friends and family, and there's always going to be some idea that, I don't know, maybe, well, I have a coworker that and their child needs help in English or math or I don't know, or sports, I don't know, so many different things that you can do that are maybe just right on the corner, and right around the corner. That was what I was trying to say. And sometimes you just need to ask and do a little bit of networking, I guess.
But also the opposite of that there can be things that are just around the corner, or like we've already touched on, your work is online.
Yes, you can do it online, of course, because you can work besides your normal working hours. You can do it, well, it's online. You can do it when you have the chance.
Because
So that
whether it's like travel,
flexibility.
Karen?
Sorry, I did not hear
No,
you.
it's okay. Karen, finish your sentence. It's fine. I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, I'm just trying to say that you can do it outside of working hours, and you can manage your time because it's online. You can do it in a train travel or on a bus ride or when you're home watching the news or something like that.
Yeah, and it's also an opportunity. Some of the volunteering that I did previously was for a German organization, because I really wanted to do something where I wasn't using my other language at all at that time, professionally, and I wanted to do something where I had more German going on in my life. So volunteering for a German organization online made a lot of sense at that time, and it was a really good experience for me, both because I was doing something that I believed in and helping people, but also because it gave me the opportunity to network with people that I wouldn't have had the chance to meet otherwise. So online can also open doors for people who want to do things with the other languages, or for people who don't drive, like I don't drive, so that also helps. But you're right that there are things right on your doorstep that you maybe don't know about, or there are things the other side of the world that you don't know about. It's about finding what you have to give and what you would like to do, and finding some way of bringing those skills into a project where they can be used and help other people.
Yes.
Well, thank you both of you for being here. I'm gonna put together our page for our episode, and it will have the links to all the organizations that we've talked about. So if anyone's listening and wants to know more about the organizations, then you can come to our page for the podcast episode, and you'll find the links there, and so you can read more about the organizations and what they do, and maybe get involved if it's something that you would be interested in becoming involved with. But thank you both for contributing to this episode today. It's been really nice to get to know more about you and to hear more about your experiences with volunteering.
Well, thank you. It was my first podcast. I hope I was okay.
It was good. Thank you.
This before, but I listen to a lot of podcasts, but it's usually comedy. But I listened to you to your some snips on some episodes, and I think I will, of course, hear it more often because I love hearing podcasts when I'm doing other things. So I think it will be. It would be nice.
Multitasking, as you've already said, multitasking is a
Yes,
good way to get more done.
like I always do.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.